No, you didn't die, so unless you were dead, you know that last week the hot topic in the entire world was Egypt. It was a crisis in Egypt, as it's been called, and what actually was a December 25th spark that ignited revolutions in the entire region caught the attention of the world, and with cause. We look around and we observe global financial meltdown, with some exceptions in the world. Food shortages, moral decay, which is increasing all the time. Worldwide conflict, weather extremes, such as like happened in this whole country, the worst winter in history, or one of the worst. The floods that are happening in Australia. The things happening with the church, we discussed, you know, Satan having come down, having great wrath, and whether that has occurred specifically or not, we'll see. But one has to wonder, and one does wonder, what is happening, and where are we with things? We've observed prophecies for years, and we look now at what God is allowing or what God is causing to happen right now, and we wonder what's next. I want to talk a little bit about that today. Something that was shuffled in the background in the last couple of days. I got a call from Dan McGee a couple of nights ago, and Dan said, "Did you see the notice in the Wall Street Journal?" Didn't. I want to read to you a little bit about what was in the Wall Street Journal on Thursday, while in papers all over the world, actually, but I looked for it on local news and so forth, and if I hadn't have been tipped off to it, I may not have noticed. This is from Wall Street Journal, February 10th, a couple of days ago. As a New York Stock Exchange Euronext says it is nearing an agreement to be bought out by Deutsche Börse. I apologize to our German visitors and others of you who speak German, but we'll call it the DB. It says if the $25 billion deal is reached and approved by regulators in the United States and Europe, the combined company... They're talking about merging the New York Stock Exchange with the German Stock Exchange. It says the combined company would trade more stocks and futures than any other exchange in the world. The Wall Street Journal writes, the merger is symbolic of New York's fading dominance on the world financial scene. An incredible happening. I want to read a little bit more on that. Yesterday, February 11th, on Fox, Peter Morici wrote this. He said the merger of the New York Stock Exchange and the German Stock Exchange is a 60-40 in favor of DB. How do you pronounce that? It's Deutsche Börse? Not close? Okay, that's fine. Merger is 60-40 in favor of DB, which means that it will be the dominant party. Even if seats on the board of directors are evenly split, the NYSE and DB, over time, this could have profound negative consequences. Here's an event that very likely is going to occur in the very near future. And observers of it say that it would have profound negative consequences. What do they mean by that? Morici goes on to say, first is the obvious prestige impact. NYSE is the symbol of American capitalism, and essentially it will be foreign-owned. This will further confirm in the minds of world political and financial leaders that gapping U.S. budget and trade deficits and all the foreign borrowing and high unemployment that results are significant attributes of an economic superpower in decline. not a small occurrence, not an insignificant glitch on a Friday afternoon. Leviticus chapter 26, I'm going to be turning to a number of scriptures, and you know me, over the last 10 or 11 years, a prophet I am not. I'm not pretending to say that there are dates and specific occurrences or connections with some of these scriptures, but the principles are there, the prophecies are there, and how it will all come down, I'm not sure. The fact that it will happen is sure, because they're God's prophecies. And I want to talk a little bit today about just that we all need to be aware of how soon God can bring this world to an end. Of how soon the return of Christ can be when God is ready. And He may be ready now, and it may be in the very short term, or He may not be ready, and we need that patience that Mr. Miller was talking about. Leviticus 26:17, He says to Israel, the modern nations of Israel today, I'm not going to go back and show how the United States and Great Britain and Australia and others are the descendants of Israel, but here's what He's talking about. It says, I will set my face against you, and you shall be defeated by your enemies. Those who hate you shall reign over you, and you shall flee when no one pursues you. Leviticus 26:18 says, and after this, if you do not obey me, then I will punish you 7 times more for your sins. And verse 19 says, and I will break the pride of your power. And that can be done in many different ways. You know, we tend to have preconceived ideas of what that means, but it can be done in many ways. You know, we are a breadbasket, and the indication right after there in verse 19 is that pride will be broken. Militarily, the pride can be broken. Financially, specifically, the Bible talks about that pride being broken, as we'll see. I want to continue reading Peter Morici's article on the subject of the merger between New York Stock Exchange and the Deutsche Börse, or DB. Morici says, over time, the distinction between NYSE and other exchanges will blur as trading floors become ever less relevant and direct trading through combined electronic exchanges dominates. Whoever owns the underlying infrastructure, its computers and systems, will be the location of equities trading. So he's talking about a location being where the power is. And it says, in relative terms, more and more U.S. equities will be traded in Europe and other locations, and fewer foreign equities will be traded in the United States. You know, when we look at prophecies, we get something specific in our mind about exactly how things are going to happen, and you know, being taken captive and what that means, and being taken over, what that means. You know, God's got ways of working things out that, whoa, never thought of that. And we may be taken captive as a nation without ever leaving home. Morici continues to say a very astute observation of the situation in this country and others, of course, around the world. Well, this country says Americans have no one to blame but themselves. You know, and it talks about the blessings and the cursings that will be given as a nation or individually. It says, if you do good things, you will be blessed. If you do not do the things that I say, you will be cursed. And this is the result of sin, what is happening right now in this nation. And again, other nations around the world, but we're focusing right now on us. Americans have no one to blame but themselves, living beyond their means. They have borrowed and continue to borrow excessively from foreigners to finance a government that spends too much and badly. And personal consumption that leaves too little margin for saving out of income. Now all those dollars that went abroad as debt securities are coming back to buy real assets. And he says it's like this, and many of you can relate, and if you sinned, you've sinned too. Okay, sin is sin. But it said it's like selling the dining room furniture chair by chair to eat caviar every night. Oh, we've got to keep up our standard of living here. We've got to eat caviar every night. But we can't really afford that, so let's sell the dining room furniture. It says it works for a while. But then you have to sell the house brick by brick. And you end up a tenant in your own home or dispossessed. Say, when it talks about the great beast power and that entity taking over the countries, you'll be taken captive. I mean, we can be taken captive in our own country and taken over by foreigners in our own country. Again, I don't know. I'm not trying to make a great prophecy here. But indeed, the point is God can work it out anytime, anyhow, He chooses. And this might be some of it. There was a headline on National Public Radio, and he was talking about this same principle here of this takeover by the German stock exchange. And the way the headline is written is very interesting. He says, New York Stock Exchange finds romance in Germany. YSE finds romance in Germany. Will it work? Is the title of this. Turn to Ezekiel chapter 23. Ezekiel 23. Our financial system is romancing Germany. Incredible prophecies. And this, at least in principle, is part of this. Ezekiel 23, verse 5. Now, Assyria in the Bible, and in the last days, prophetically, Assyria was taken over by the Roman Empire, and it's kind of a resurrected Babylonian and Roman Empire, which we've said has been the beast power, and Germany ruling over that. And so we've equated Assyria to Germany. At any rate, it says Ezekiel 23, verse 5, Ahola played the harlot, even though she was mine. She lusted for her lovers, the neighboring Assyrians, who were clothed in purple, captains and rulers, all of them desirable young men, horsemen riding on horses, who is one of the top financial powers right now coming out of this worldwide decline. Well, certainly China. But in Europe, Germany is kind of the... I'll read a little bit more on that. Says verse 7, she has committed harlotry with them, all of them choice men of Assyria, and with all of whom she lusted with her idols, and she defiled herself. Verse 8, she has never given up her harlotry brought from Egypt. Israel, when she was in Egypt, ended up adopting the pagan worship. The symbol of the sun and all those many, many other gods that the Egyptians had. And God struck out against the gods of Egypt. And then Israel went back to calf worship and sun worship carried down. Now we have a harlotry from Egypt. The worship and even Christianity today comes predominantly from Babylonian and Egyptian sources. It I'll get to that in just a little bit. Anyway, for in her youth, they had lain with her, pressed her virgin bosom, and poured out their immorality on her. Verse 9, therefore I have delivered her into the hand of her lovers, into the hand of the Assyrians, for whom she lusted. And this is prophetically speaking of things that would happen where the Israelitish nations would sell themselves out to foreign nations, and then they would be taken over by those foreign nations. Hosea chapter 8. Hosea chapter 8. And I don't know, I just read the prophecies, and you know, whether there are specific references to some of these events occurring or that will occur, we know that the principles are there, and that these are things prophesied to happen in the end. Hosea chapter 8, Hosea, Joel, Amos. It's right near Obadiah. New Living Translation, Hosea 8, verse 6. This calf you worship, O Israel, was crafted by your own hands. It is not God. Therefore, it must be smashed to bits. It's talking about the gods that we have created. And indeed, we've created this gigantic financial golden calf, among others. You look at our military power and all the great things that we have done as a nation, and he says, but you've set up your own methods of worship. Verse 7, they have planted the wind and will harvest the whirlwind. I appreciate Mr. Miller's instruction on what a real planting is and how to go about reaping a good harvest. And you plant the wrong things, you do it your way instead of God's way. Then you planted the wind and will harvest the whirlwind, stalks of grain. Is this talking about money? I think in one principle it can be. The stalks of grain wither and produce nothing to eat, and even if there is any grain, the foreigners will eat it. You know, the money that we have generated in this country is just a bunch of paper right now. I mean, the billions of dollars, trillions of dollars that we are in debt, with literally no hope of paying it off. We have nothing. We have grain. We have money that is literally worthless. And in principle, then the foreigners, if there is anything left, the foreigners will eat it. Verse 8. People of Israel have been swallowed up. They lie among the nations like an old discarded pot. Like a wild donkey looking for a mate, they've gone up to Assyria. We'll get rescued out of our financial difficulties. We'll let Germany buy up our stock exchange. The people of Israel have sold themselves to many lovers. Who owns our money? China. Germany. Verse 10. But though they have sold themselves to many allies, I will now gather them together for judgment. Then they will writhe under the burden of the great king. Verse 11. Israel has built many altars to take away sin. I mean, look at the numbers of churches we have in this country, and they are many. But how many are literally worshiping God the way God says he wants to be worshiped. The way God says he wants to be worshiped. It goes on to say they have built many altars to take away sin, but these very altars become places for sinning. You erect a Christmas tree, and you erect your cross on Easter, and all these other things, the Easter eggs, and get all these different things. Verse 12, even though I gave them all my laws, they act as if those laws don't apply to them. Oh, we love the Lord. The Lord says, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. So that doesn't apply to us. Verse 13, the people of Israel love their rituals of sacrifice, but to me, their sacrifices are all meaningless. Oh, we're just doing this to worship Jesus. We're just doing this to worship the Lord, even though it's our way and comes from abject paganism, from Egypt and from Babylon. He says, I will hold my people accountable for their sins, and I will punish them. They will return to Egypt. They'll be under someone else's power, and we are, you know, spiritually under Satan's power. Verse 14, Israel has forgotten its makers and built great palaces. Now, the Hebrew there means a large public building, a palace or a temple. You got these great palaces, you got these huge buildings, and some of them as places of worship. It says, and Judah has fortified cities, therefore I will send fire on their cities and will burn up their fortresses or their castles or their palaces. I mean, you look at the housing crisis in this country today. People have built their palaces. And some of you are in that circumstance where, you know, we get caught up in what everybody else was doing. And people built their palaces to live in. And we got greedy. And if you're caught up in greed, you're caught up in greed. Let's admit it. Because we wanted to make a lot of money. So we buy a place, we can make a lot of money because it's only going to go up. It's like putting money in a giant slot machine and thinking, oh, I'm going to win, but I'll tithe when I win. And this is what this country has done. And he says that he's going to send fire on our cities to burn up their fortresses. Phoenix 63% underwater on the mortgages? Owe more than the house is worth if you did sell it? I mean, our profits are burned up. Our palaces are burned up, if you will. Now, we're in a pretty bad situation, to say the least. Revelation chapter 13. Revelation chapter 13. And there are principles here that he talks about what things that are going to happen in the end times. Exactly where we are on that, I don't know. Because it says, no man knows the day or the hour. And I'm certainly the chief among those that don't know. But these principles are here, and we had better be aware and spiritually ready. Revelation 13, verse 9, it says, if anyone has an ear, let him hear. Thank you, Mr. Miller. That's exactly what he said. Verse 10, he who leads into captivity shall go into captivity. He who kills with a sword must be killed with a sword. And here's the patience and the faith of the saints. Verse 11, then I saw another beast coming out of the earth, and he had two horns like a lamb and spoke like a dragon. And he exercises all the authority of the first beast in his presence, and he causes the earth and those that dwell in it to worship the first beast. There's a situation going on here where you've got a spiritual leader over the physical nations, and so you've got the beast, and you've got the great false prophet that's riding the beast, and you've got this conglomeration of nations together at the end time that are going to be dominant powers. And essentially, if we have understood it, the European power would be headed by a leader in Germany, and then that would be headed by a great false church. Verse 15, he was granted power to give breath to the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak and cause as many as would not worship the image of the beast to be killed. Verse 16, he causes all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and slave, to receive a mark on their hand or their foreheads, that no one may buy or sell except one who has the mark or the name of the beast, or the number of his name, which is 666. I expect there will be hundreds of ways to create 666 out of a merging of New York Stock Exchange and the German Exchange, but I don't go there. God will reveal these things. But the bottom line is that this great power that's going to be at the end time is going to control the world's money sources. Wall Street Journal, February 12th, 2011. That was just this morning. When I looked it up, it was like 56 minutes ago when I looked that up. And the article here is Germany's central bank chief resigns. But even you didn't know that. Weber's withdrawal throws succession for top job at Eurobank into disarray, complicating plans to solve the debt crisis in Europe. Germany's not doing too bad overall, but she's bailing out Spain and she's bailing out Ireland and various things. But notice these things. How can things come together? You talk about a Roman ruler over the German ruler over the combined nations. Anyway, this is part of that article that I pulled up this morning from Wall Street Journal. It says, Germany is the driving power behind the European talks over the creation of a permanent bailout system for struggling Eurozone countries, which Berlin has made conditional on other countries adopting through fiscal rules and overhauling their economies. German is the big mover and shaker in this. Ms. Merkel was hoping that having a German ECB president would make the permanent safety net for other countries more palatable for German voters. And the article states that it's a French person who was over the Euro bank. But the next one in succession was going to be this German guy. And now this German guy resigned, and so you're not going to have a German guy that's over that European bank. So who might next be in succession? Well, we don't know. However, the article goes on to state later, other European countries, however, are growing resentful at Germany's growing political dominance over the 17-nation Eurozone. The recent export-driven economic surge in Germany, long the region's largest economy, have made it Europe's growth engine as well. And then it says on Thursday, just a couple of days ago, Italy's economy minister, Julio Tremonti, said that Italy's chief central banker was widely seen as Mr. Weber's main rival for the ECB post would be an optimal next president. So we find an Italian guy that is over the Eurobank, which is over, of course, the Germans are behind that. So you got an Italian, we're going over the Germans, we're going over the rest of the nation. I don't know. It's just interesting to see these things happen. I'm not sure how prophetic they are or what that would have to do, having an Italian chief banker, if that would have anything to do with the Pope in Rome or not. Who knows? At any rate, Revelation chapter 17:17. Revelation 17:17, with all of these things that are to happen, we see that God is in charge. Revelation 17:17 says, for God has put it into their hearts to accomplish his purpose by agreeing to give the beast their power to rule until God's words are fulfilled. Okay, so it is going to happen. I'm not exactly sure how, but it said God will work it in the minds of people to give themselves over to the beast. And then the end will come. And again, it's interesting in light of this New York Stock Exchange and the largest trade exchange in the world. Some of these other prophecies, Revelation chapter 18, verse 1, says after these things, this is how it all ends. But notice what has transpired before it all ends. And after these things, I saw another angel come down, is Revelation 18, 1, from heaven, having great power, and the earth was lighted with his glory. And he cried with a mighty and a strong voice, saying, Babylon the great is fallen, become the habitation of devils and the hold of every foul spirit, the cage of every unclean and hateful bird. It says, all nations have drunk the wine of the wrath of her fornication, and the kings of the earth have committed fornication with her, and the merchants of the earth are waxed rich through the abundance of her delicacies. So it's going to be a financial power that all are leaning on, and that all become rich by. Not all become rich, but it says those that are rich will become rich by this power that they're going to give themselves over to until God's purpose is fulfilled. And verse 4, it says, and I heard another voice from heaven saying, come out of her, my people, you be not partakers of her sins, and receive not of her plagues. They don't get caught up in this system. We've got financial and spiritual responsibilities we have to have, doing it in a godly way, not following the ways of the world. And we have to be continually alert to that. We don't get caught up in it. Verse 9 says, therefore shall her plagues come in one day, death and mourning and famine, and she'll be utterly burned with fire, for strong is the Lord God who judges her. And then it says, verse 9, and the kings of the earth who have committed fornication and lived deliciously with her shall bewail her and lament for her when they see the smoke of her burning, standing afar off in torment, saying, alas, alas, the great city Babylon, the mighty city, for in one hour your judgment is come, and this will be set up, and it'll fall as quickly as it was built, or more quickly. In verse 11, the merchants of the earth shall weep and mourn over her, for no man buys their merchandise anymore. You know, it's the trading exchange for all things. People will, it sounds like they're going to be quite powerful, and it will be the controlling financial power in the world. You control the financial power, you control so many, many other things. You know, it talks in the Bible about the trading and so forth, but you know, we do trading. Everybody, if you notice the stock exchange anymore, those of you that have been there in the past, you saw it, everybody's waving their hand, you know, and they're looking out and they're writing things on the board and everything. Now you look and they're on their iPads, you know, and that's how they're doing the exchange. But verse 17 says, for in one hour so great riches have come to nothing. And every shipmaster and all the company and ships and sailors and as many as trade by sea stood afar off. And they cried when they saw the smoke of her burning, saying, what city is like unto this great city? They cast dust on their heads and cried, weeping and wailing, alas, alas, the great city wherein we were made rich, all that had ships in the sea by reason of her costliness, for in one hour she's made desolate. So this is how it's going to end up. So we know how it ends up. And then Jesus Christ returns to the earth in the next chapter. And then he begins to set things straight. Well, of course, the other hot topic going on is Egypt. And what is happening with Egypt? What is going to happen? Now, Hosni Mubarak, if you have been away or whatever, did resign, and on Friday. And you know, while I know you'd like to have a prophet in your midst, like the disciples asked Christ, you know, tell us when will these things be, and what will be the sign of the coming of the end. I am not that prophet. However, I can read the scripture and tell you in general what is happening and what will happen. So let's talk about that a little bit. It hasn't gotten by many people. Isaiah chapter 19, I know at the conference a couple of weeks ago, some of the wives and some of the ministers have been reading through some of these, and some of you have read this and commented on it. But Isaiah chapter 19, and so many prophecies are dual. You know, we have prophecies that were given to Egypt back then and what would happen to them, and they did come to pass. And those prophecies have dual purposes, that it not only applied to them, but it's got a greater application in the end times for Egypt and Israel and other nations in the Bible. So, again, we can read this and apply it back to that time, but then it gets with certain terminology where, no, it's not talking about then. It can only be applying to a time future, because nothing like this has happened in the history. So it's a future prophecy from this point on. Anyway, Revelation chapter 19 and verse 2. And again, many read this. It said, I will set Egyptians against Egyptians. Everyone will fight against his brother and everyone against his neighbor. City against city, kingdom against kingdom. Now, yes, the 30-year despot of Egypt has been, he resigned, Hosni Mubarak is gone. I was listening to a couple of, they seem to be kind of instigators, but there are a couple of 29 and a 30-year-old Egyptian that I was watching on live TV last night, and they were talking and said, we've done it. You know, we have freed our nation, and we're not under the oppression anymore of this dictator. And the interviewer says, so what's going to happen from here? Is that, we don't know. We haven't thought that far. You know, if you talk to anyone who tells you they know what's going to happen in Egypt, just turn the thing off, because nobody knows what's going to happen. Now, I can tell you what's going to happen just by reading certain scriptures in a longer view. But immediately, nobody knows. It's one of those things that's just kind of up for grabs. Isaiah chapter 19, verse 10. And I think in principle, you'll find this happening with Egypt in the near future, as it was, again, a prophecy in the past. But it says they will, this is the New Living Translation, Isaiah 19, verse 10, they will be in despair and all the workers will be sick at heart. Right now, you've got workers sick at heart because they have nothing coming in. If you've seen some of the interviews with the merchants, like one guy says, he had a leather shop, and he said, I haven't sold a coat in 3 weeks. Got nothing. It showed the people with their horses out there by the pyramids, and not one person out there touring, and you know, it cost them, I forget what it is, $1 a day or something to feed their horses, and they don't make much. I mean, some people only make $1 a day total. But anyway, their merchants are wailing already. But they're expecting things to start getting back to normal, whatever that means. Because there is no normal now. Verse 11. What fools are the officials of Zoan? Their best counsel to the king of Egypt is stupid and wrong. They will still boast to their Pharaoh. Will they still boast to their Pharaoh of their wisdom? Will they dare brag about all their wise ancestors? Where are your wise counselors, Pharaoh? Let them tell you what God plans, what the Lord's of heaven's armies is going to do to Egypt. Okay, Mr. Mubarak, you want to know what's going to happen? We'll read it here. Verse 13, the officials of Zoan are fools. The officials of Memphis are deluded. The leaders of the people have led Egypt astray. Who are their leaders right now? Anybody have any clues? I mean, they don't know. So I know you don't know. Now, there are possibilities, you know, the Muslim Brotherhood. You've got terrorists that would love to take over and will certainly try to take advantage of the situation. You've got the military power. Who are their leaders right now? They don't know. Verse 14, the Lord has sent a spirit of foolishness on them, so all their suggestions are wrong. Interesting way the New Living Translation puts that. What's going to happen? I don't know. How about if we do this? Yeah, but what about that? So I don't know. They cause Egypt to stagger like a drunk in his vomit. There is nothing Egypt can do. They are helpless. The head and the tail, the noble palm branch and the lowly reed. It's kind of a mess over there right now. That's exactly what this says. An article from McClatchy newspapers yesterday. The title is Egypt's Revolution Will Remake the Middle East. But how? Is the title of that. Egypt's Revolution Will Remake the Middle East, but how? This article says the stakes for the United States in a region that has long been bedeviled, are stratospheric. What's going to happen in Egypt? The effect is stratospheric, this article calls it. The Egyptian revolution could be a huge defeat or a huge victory for Al-Qaeda. Okay, that's prophetic. It's either going to be or it's not. Huge defeat or a huge victory for Al-Qaeda. It depends on what happens. See, it talks about Egypt's leaders being a little thick. This was Kenneth Pollack, a former CIA and White House official who is now director of the Brookings Institute, Sabin Center for Mideast Policy. He says, if things turn out well, it could destroy their narrative of the Al-Qaeda. On the other hand, if things turn out well for Al-Qaeda, it could really be a boon. CIA Director Leon Panetta told Congress Thursday before Mubarak's departure was official, the events in Egypt will have tremendous impact. If it's done right, it will help us a great deal in trying to promote stability in that part of the world. If it happens wrong, it could create some serious problems for us and the rest of the world. So is it going to be done right or is it going to be done wrong? Take your guess. Now you look at Scripture and you say, if it's done even right now, it's going to be done wrong later. So what will happen in Egypt? Again, I can definitely tell you what's going to happen to Egypt. I can definitely tell you. And I'll show you that in a little bit. I can definitely tell you how it's going to turn out. Between now and that prophecy, I'm not sure. Egypt is mentioned 611 times in the Bible. I mean, it's a major player. It's played a huge part in Bible history and Bible prophecy as far as nationally and Bible prophecy spiritually because of its implications as a pagan nation that influences others, like we read about with Egypt being the predecessor of the gods that people worship even in Christianity today. LA Times article yesterday. This title is Israelis Divided on How to Respond to Egypt Turmoil. Now, Egypt has been basically an ally of Israel. They haven't been, the past wars certainly, but since 73, things have been pretty peaceful. They haven't been having to guard their borders. We drove right along the Egyptian border, and there's a lot of old tanks there that were destroyed in the 73 war, but it's been a long time. This article says, as Israel faces what many fear could turn into the most serious national security threat in decades. this. Again, this was written yesterday, so it's pretty up to date. Fault lines are widening over how it should respond, and some critics say government appears ill-prepared. And the article is interesting because it says, basically in Israel, nobody kind of expected this would happen, or at least would happen now. And then say, so now what? They say, I don't know. Now what? Now what? This one person, Levy, said, Israel had relied heavily on Mubarak to defend its regional policies regarding peace talks with the Palestinians and the security cordon around Gaza Strip, and now will have difficulties adjusting to a more democratic Egyptian government. George Friedman, chief executive for Straffer, a global political research firm, said, Israel focused on Mubarak government as if it were eternal. Israel focused on the Mubarak government as if it were eternal. They're our ally. Don't have to worry about stuff there. It says, Israel's have obsessed over lesser threats like Hezbollah in Lebanon, Hamas in the Gaza Strip, and the national threat of Iranian nuclear weapons, but they took for granted the relationship with Egypt, which is a much greater threat to Israel's survival. Now notice those couple of comments that he makes, is that Israel focused on Mubarak government as if it were eternal, and they took for granted the relationship with Egypt as a safety measure. Turn to Ezekiel 29. Ezekiel 29. Some of the prophecies regarding Egypt and regarding Israel just kind of slap you in the face. It's kind of like some of the scriptures regarding our church crisis recently reached out and slapped you in the face about, wow, you know, that's us. That's what's happening. That's what God is saying to us. Ezekiel 29, verse 6, New Living Translation, says, all the people of Egypt will know that I am the Lord, for to Israel you were just a staff made of reeds. In verse 7, when Israel leaned on you, you splintered and broke and stabbed her in the armpit. When she put her weight on you, you gave way and her back was thrown out of joint. Oh, Mubarak's going to be there. Egypt is our ally. We'll look at all these other things. We're going to lean on Egypt. And Egypt is a reed that will splinter. And when it splinters, it'll stab you in the armpit. Sorry. Mubarak was not eternal. Only your God is eternal. Then we better turn to God and quit leaning on Egypt. When you look at Egypt in Bible prophecy, and again, some of these things were for Egypt then and the things that would happen in their near future and in their history, and some things then apply to the very end times. I'll give just a little brief review of that. Ezekiel 29, verse 13. Ezekiel 29:13, New Living Translation again. This is what the Sovereign Lord says. At the end of 40 years, I'll bring the Egyptians home again from the nations to which they've been scattered. I will restore the prosperity of Egypt and bring its people back to the land of Pathros and southern Egypt from which they come. But Egypt will remain an unimportant minor kingdom. It'll never gain the strength that it had when it ruled basically the world at that time. Although it wouldn't be a non-existent kingdom, it would be a relatively minor kingdom. Verse 15, it will be the lowliest of all nations and never again great enough to rise above its neighbors. Now they talk about Egypt being powerful right now in its own sense, but I'll give a little explanation of history. Verse 16 of Ezekiel 29, it says, then Israel will no longer be tempted to trust in Egypt for help. Egypt's shattered condition will remind Israel of how sinful she was to trust in Egypt in earlier days. Then Israel will know that I am the Sovereign Lord. Now Israel Egypt was taken over by the Babylonians and would never be a superpower again like it had been. Through its history, we found a couple of hundred years, there's basically a Greek kingdom. It's interesting, touring Israel, you find remnants of Greek, and remnants of Roman, and of course a lot of Arab. Then it came out as an independent power under the Ptolemies for about 300 years, became a Roman possession after that. So it never was in its own right a great power. Centuries later, it came under the Islamic Empire. And then in modern times, it's basically Arab and technically not an Egyptian state. The Egyptians, as the Egyptians were, predominantly look, and they're the Copts and the, not as in Copts and Robbers, but COPTS, and the Gypsies. So they're basically never did come back as a great nation. But then the Bible prophesies about the future, and you go to Daniel chapter 11. Daniel chapter 11. And here is an end time prophecy. And it says, at the time of the end shall the king of the south, which appears to be a Muslim-controlled mass of people who will then be headed north, and they'll attack at him, and the king of the north, which would be the beast power we were talking about that has control over the economy and control over much of the military, might and power in the world by the time this comes to pass, shall come against him like a whirlwind with chariots and horsemen and with many ships. It's a great military clash. And he'll enter into the countries and shall overflow and pass over. And he'll also enter the glorious land, come on into Jerusalem, taking over Jerusalem. And the land of Egypt shall not escape. And so what's going to happen at the end? Well, Egypt is going to be in this great conflagration with the king of the north, with the beast power. And, of course, that's the end is so close at that time, it's kind of like everybody loses. Ezekiel chapter 30. Ezekiel chapter 30. Be wrapping it up here pretty quick because it's coming near the time of the end, and I'll give you the conclusive prophecy. But Ezekiel chapter 30 and verse 2, New Living Translation says, "Son of man, prophesy and give this message from the Sovereign Lord. Weep and wail for that day. For the terrible day is almost here, the day of the Lord." And this again can be dual in its implications of past events, but certainly it's prophesying about the end. It's a day of clouds and gloom, a day of despair for the nations. Verse 4, a sword will come against Egypt, and all those who are slaughtered will cover the ground. Its wealth will be carried away, its foundations destroyed. The land of Ethiopia will be ravished. Ethiopia, Libya, Lydia, and all Arabia, and all the other allies will be destroyed in that war. Verse 6, this is what the Lord says. All of Egypt's allies will fail, and the pride of her power will end. From Migdol to Aswan, they'll be slaughtered by the sword, says the Sovereign Lord. Verse 7, Egypt will be desolate, surrounded by desolate nations. Its cities will be in ruins, surrounded by other ruined cities. And verse 8, people of Egypt will know that I am the Lord when I've set Egypt on fire and destroyed all their allies. You know, they have not ever given themselves over to God. So it's going to be a time that they will know He is the Lord. And more than just hearing with the hearing of the ear, but their eye will see when God will open their minds. Verse 9, at that time I'll send swift messengers and ships to terrify the complacent Ethiopians. Great panic will come on them in that day of Egypt's certain destruction. Watch for it. It's sure to come. So once the prophecies about what's going to happen, that'll be right at the return of Christ that these things will occur. Isaiah chapter 19, we'll turn back there again. And we'll read the last of these prophecies here. Through those end time events, the great tribulation, the day of the Lord, it says that Israel will be punished for her sins, her rebellion against God, as all the nations will. It's not just saying this will happen to Egypt, but all who have rejected God will end up in this circumstance. And then here's what is to happen. God promises to heal Egypt and heal the rest of the nations who will know that He is the Lord, that will submit to Him. And so I said I'd give you a definite prophecy that I know is going to happen. Just don't know exactly when, but here's what God says will happen with Egypt and with these other nations, including Germany and others. Isaiah 19:18, in that day, five cities in the land of Egypt will speak the language of Canaan and swear by the Lord of hosts. One will be called the city of destruction. Verse 19, in that day there will be an altar to the Lord in the midst of the land of Egypt, and a pillar to the Lord at its border. And it will be for a sign and a witness to the Lord of hosts in the land of Egypt, for they will cry to the Lord because of the oppressors, and He will send them a Savior, a mighty one, and He will deliver them. And so Christ is going to return, and He's going to return to them too. He's going to give them hope. He's going to give them understanding. He's going to give them an opportunity to receive the kingdom, as all nations will have that opportunity. Verse 21, then the Lord will be known to Egypt, and the Egyptians will know the Lord in that day, and will make sacrifice and offerings. Yes, they will make a vow to the Lord and perform it. They will come under His covenant. They will know the truth by being given His Spirit after Christ's return. In verse 22, the Lord will strike Egypt. He will strike and heal it. Just like He does with us when we strike. As He strikes us to get our attention, and then He intervenes and heals. They will return to the Lord, and He will be entreated by them and heal them. Verse 23, in that day, after Christ's return, when He has begun to establish His kingdom and bring peace to the world, in that day there will be a highway from Egypt to Assyria, and the Assyrian will come to Egypt, and the Egyptian to the Assyrian, and the Egyptians will serve with the Assyrians. Verse 24, in that day Israel will be one of three with Egypt and Assyria, a blessing in the midst of the land. You know, you had Assyria, who was a great opposing power. You had Egypt, who was a great opposing power to Israel. And now you find the three of them as brothers, living together, working together, and serving God. Verse 25, there will be a blessing in the midst of the land whom the Lord of hosts shall bless, saying, blessed is Egypt, my people, and Assyria, the work of my hands, and Israel, my inheritance. And the world then will have peace. It's not going to come through peace talks at this time. It's not going to come through great revolutions that overthrow dictators. It is not going to come by the mighty hand of the American army. It is going to come by the hand of God. And we have an opportunity to participate in that wonderful time when healing will be restored to this sick world. Let's conclude in Matthew 24. Bottom line, many things are happening in the world today. Things can happen quickly in ways just make you reel, make your head spin and say, how did that happen? I never looked at it that way before. But God is in charge. And we'll make sure it happens according to his plan. But we need to be ready and right before God, whatever happens in prophecy. That is for sure. Matthew 24, verse 42, and it tells us, "Watch therefore, for you don't know what hour the Lord is coming." Verse 43, "But know this, the master of the house had known what hour the thief would come, he would have watched and not allowed his house to be broken into." No, we're not going to be able to second guess it. We're not going to be able to, with our great prophetic prowess, figure out exactly when these things will be and exactly what it means. But we do know God's prophecies are sure. But it says, verse 44, "Therefore, you also be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an hour you don't expect." So that's what to watch for, something you don't expect, rather than what we prophesy and think might. Verse 45, "Who then is that faithful and wise servant whom his master has made ruler over his household to give them food in due season? Blessed is that servant whom his master, when he comes, shall find so doing."